Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff, host of The Voice of Change. Today, my guest is Karen Melton, prenatal and perinatal therapist. And today is part two of a two-part series on the topic preparing for your baby and parenthood prior to conception. The Voice of Change brings to radio individuals speaking out on pertinent aspects of life during these transformational times. During these programs, I interview spiritual teachers, visionaries, birth therapists, parents, educators, business professionals, cultural creatives, youth, and artists. Guests share their thoughts, ideas, and insights about these changing days and how one can live in harmony with themselves and those around them on the planet. We can no longer close our eyes to the devastation taking place on the planet and the chaos in the lives of many. This is the time to be open to new ideas, healing ways, and change. I want to support individuals during these transformational times on the planet by providing inspiring and creative solutions to the challenges being faced. Today's program is one of those transformational programs. It is for parents, but also for anyone interested in understanding more about the effects of one's own birth on his or her life. Karen Melton has a prenatal and birth therapy practice in Northern California, focusing on the prevention and healing of prenatal, birth, and bonding trauma with babies, adults, kids, and parents. She is a mature, experienced practitioner offering gentle somatic and regulatory healing work. Karen's initial and most important training in the prenatal and perinatal psychology and health began in the womb. There she learned about how profoundly and deeply our lives are affected by our journey into life and from conception onward. She trained extensively with Dr. William Emerson and Dr. Ray Castellino when she moved to California from England 13 years ago. Prior to that time, she practiced as a counselor and therapist in England for 15 years. Today is part two in a two-part series, Preparing for Your Baby and for Parenthood Before Conception. Welcome, Karen.
Morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so wonderful to have you on again. I'm so glad we're doing this part two.
Thank you. Me too.
So wonderful. Would you please just share with our listeners a little bit about prenatal and perinatal psychology and health before we go into our part two?
Yes, I would love to. Prenatal and perinatal psychology and health is simply about the psychology of what happens to us, how we're affected by our journey into life. And by the journey into life, I mean that period of time that we come in. We come into conception and we spend 9 months in the womb and then we get born. And then the period of time just after that. So prenatal actually means before birth. And perinatal means around birth. And so it's that whole period of time there. And prenatal and perinatal psychology and health also speaks to what creates health for us in that period of development, that extraordinarily important foundational period of development, as well as how we're affected by what happens to us and by our environment.
It's just so, so amazing that we have this huge study going on, but so few people are aware of it.
Yes.
You know, how can this be? We have gone to the moon. We have gone back. And yet our own birth and our own existence into life, we basically totally ignore as if it didn't even exist prior to the time we see that infant.
I know. It is extraordinary. But in a way, if you look at the way that our culture has gone for a long time, it's been very dominated by the scientific and medical professions.
Yes. Yeah.
And a very much invalidating science and intellect. and cognition and mm-hmm. all the other aspects of human beings, which are considerable, have tended to become rather neglected, to say the least.
Yes, yes,
and,
so true.
One of the things about this early period of time, you know, there's always been a disagreement, if you like, between the pre- and perinatal people and the medical people for some time mm-hmm. about whether we actually can remember, whether we can have memory at that age and so on. And they've had their point of view about it, and we've had ours. But, of course, as time goes by, science and research discovers more and more and more things which actually mm-hmm. do validate our point of view.
Yes.
And so, you know, we must always remember with science and even with the medical model that nobody knows everything, even though they might sound like they do. And there's always new discoveries and new things being discovered. And for some reason, it does seem to take us quite a long time to take those new things on into the central culture for some reason.
It certainly does. And I think, you know, as you mentioned the medical model, this period of time has been so much influenced by the head, so to speak, instead of the heart.
Yeah.
And I think we're coming into that time now where the heart is going to be really recognized and, you know, so much more given to the balance there between the head and the heart, and perhaps in people's stories, you know, like yours and mine and many other people,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, our experience pre-birth will be taken to heart. I was amazed when I found the book. I think you actually introduced it to me, perhaps, was Thomas Verney,
mm-hmm.
The Life of the Unborn Child. I mean,
this
is in the 1980s, and there he's talking how, you know, definite there was existence that we did have a where the infant before birth knew and understood, I don't want to say understood, but had feelings and was able to be aware.
Yes.
And for that to be so much not in the forefront of our knowledge, I find amazing.
Yes, and I mean, it's interesting that you were talking about, you know, the heart and head becoming more balanced. The way I look at it is more that we will include the body, the whole body, not just the heart, but that we will include our body in our life, which many of us don't really. And you can't really be aware of this part of your life, this early developmental time, if you're not in contact with your body, because the memories that we have from that time are stored in our body. They're not in our cognitive brain.
Mm-hmm,
and that's
mm-hmm.
the really big shift that I think needs to be made.
It does, doesn't it? Because the body really does remember. And I know you have a wonderful exercise. How do you say it? Stepping down or...
Oh, dropping in.
Dropping in, yes.
Mm.
And perhaps we can review that again today, because when you do that dropping in, you know, and I've experienced it because I've worked with you, you really get it. You really get the fact that you can go into your body. It's just a beautiful
mm-hmm.
way of experiencing that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Okay, let's go on here. In part one, we finished on a centering orientation exercise. Could you talk more about that, Karen, and about why you teach that to people and the importance in parenting?
Mm-hmm.
You might even want to review it.
Yes. Yes, what I taught, what I call a midline orientation, which again I thank Ray Castanino for teaching me. I use this all the time in my work. I teach pretty much all my clients how to do this. And it's really great to have a quick way to reference your center. And this is very important for anyone who's interested in personal awareness and being more present in their life. And it's even more important for parents who want to be conscious, because we can't be conscious if we're not present. And part of being present is also being able to track ourselves. And what does that mean? It means having, it's almost like having an observer self that's watching us,
mm-hmm.
not in a detached way, but just in an interested, curious way, seeing what's going on now. And being present is a practice. So having this midline orientation exercise is really a really great way to start learning that. And I will just run through it again if you'd like me to. And everyone,
yes,
anyone who's listening.
Yes, please do. And I just love the way that you said having an observer self, because that's really what we is, what we are doing. We're acting, but we're kind of stepping outside of ourselves to look back and see, you know, what are you doing? What? How are you acting right
yeah.
now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What
Beautiful.
Are you doing now? What is this?
Right.
About?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Do you want to do
Why?
It like this? Do you really want to do it this way?
Right.
Well, maybe
yes.
I don't.
Yes. You have a choice, you know?
Yeah. That's
yeah,
right.
That observer says you have a choice here.
That's right. So that's the idea is to really build more choice.
Right.
And that's such an important thing to have as a parent because,
certainly,
you know, in a situation which might be very heated or somewhat difficult with your child, if you have that faculty of being able to observe and say, wow, what am I doing?
Yeah.
God, I'm really behaving like my mother right now, and I don't want to do that. So what do I want to do?
Right.
Okay, now I'm going to do this. And
yeah.
that's where it creates that space for choice and self-reflection in the moment, in the relationship, which is really wonderful.
Oh, so beautiful.
So this is a beginning. This is kind of like the first level that I teach people in the midline orientation of beginning to track themselves and come to center regularly. And so if you'd like to do this just now, it's very simple. And just close your eyes and be comfortable and feel your feet on the ground. And I'm going to run through the orientation, and each place that I mention, I want you to just allow yourself to connect physically and energetically with that place. So Mother Earth, connect with the ground with your feet, or if your body's on the ground, with your body. Mother Earth, Father Sky, feel the top of your head. Back, feel your back. Front, feel your front body. Inside, feel your inside. Outside, left side and right side. That's Mother Earth, Father Sky, back, front, inside, outside, left, right. And that's it, basically. And I teach that to people, and I ask them to just go out and play with it, practice. Do it all over the place. Do it when you're driving. Do it when you're having a conversation with somebody. Do it when you're on your own. And just experiment and find out what's going on with you around where you are in relation to your center, in relation to your midline.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're actually doing two things in this exercise. You're learning to track yourself, and you're learning to come to center and practice the skill of coming to center. And in, like most things, the more you do this, the easier it gets. And you can just do it anywhere and everywhere really easily. Nobody would even notice that you're doing it, even if you're in the middle of a conversation with them. It's really amazing little exercise.
Yes.
And one of the things that I noticed when I started doing it was I noticed, and everybody will notice something different about this, but I noticed that my default position for my energy was a little bit forward of my body, as if I was coming in front of myself.
Mm.
And so I used to actually, when I did the midline orientation, I did the back, front, inside, outside part, I would actually need to do that part more than the others.
Yes.
Because that was the place where I was slightly out of alignment with my center energetically. And so I had to keep doing that more and more and more. And sometimes I would also really, you know, even put my hand on my back so I could really feel my back if I needed a little bit more help, and then my front. And or the other thing I might do is just slow down a little bit more with that particular area and really wait until I could feel myself there, back. Back, oh yeah, there I am, and then front, you know. And so it's different for everybody, and it's a fun thing to play with.
Oh, certainly. When I tried it for the first time, I felt absolutely nothing. And the second time, absolutely nothing. And I thought, this is interesting. I've done a lot of this work, and I thought, okay, maybe it's just one of those things that I'm not going to relate to. And then after I slept on it, I noticed that my front was very open. And it was just so interesting because my energy has been such that sometimes I search to see what's out there, and so that I am can understand other people rather than actually having my own self, perhaps more self-defined. There was no boundaries. So it was very interesting to just kind of play with that and make sure that, you know, I had a boundary to that front. And it was very interesting.
It's a great self-exploration tool. And it's really a great human being tool, Sharon, but it's particularly a good parenting tool because it's so important when you're parenting. If you want to be a conscious parent, to be able to have a way of knowing where you are, especially in relationship, because that's what parenting is. It's a very intimate relationship with another being.
So.
And as we know, in our intimate relationships, we can, you know, get into our stuff and get lost at times. And having a way to reference into our center and track ourselves in the moment is one of the greatest parenting skills you can have, I think.
Oh, I think so. You know, when you use the word track, I just love it. But for some, I know it's kind of oblivious, as it was for me at first. Can you just, tracking is basically knowing what you're doing, being that observer. Is that true?
Observing, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's
observing.
Like looking, yeah, it's really about tracking yourself. It's in a way, it's an interesting word, isn't it, tracking? Because you could think about a hunter tracking something, looking for signs and being very tuned in and very aware in a kind of a way of consciousness that's heightened in a way.
Heightened awareness.
A heightened awareness that you can actually just have in a very relaxed way a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know, once you've actually learned to track and kind of done the basics and started practicing it, it's like everything, when you practice it becomes much easier, it begins to flow, and it just becomes a part of your life.
Yes. And each person, too, makes it kind of their own, you know, depending on what happens. And if we just kind of listen, then, you know, a parent can kind of fine-tune it to fit their needs.
Yes, and you know, as you develop your tracking skills more and more, you're able to use them for much more things like how, you know, you're able to actually use them to help you when you get activated into early imprints, which we are all doing all the time, even though most of us don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually begin to see those places where you get activated and what activates you and why you get activated and what you do when you get activated. And you can also use your tracking skills. You can use them to watch all of those things.
Yeah.
And you can also use them to help you to differentiate between, oh, I'm in an activation right now, and this is about something that happened in the past, and it's not happening now.
Beautiful. So can you speak a little bit more about activation and what you mean about being triggered and how that does affect, you know, one person, and as a parent or during even birthing?
Yes, I will. Well, we all have early imprints. That is, we all hold all the memories from everything that's ever happened to us. And I am, of course, specifically speaking to that period of time from conception through just after birth. And there are certain situations in our lives in which they'll come more alive in us. And they color our perception of what's happening in the present. And so we often shift into the reality of an early memory because something has triggered us in the present. So, for example, for some people, it might just be being in a group, because being in a group can amplify a core feeling that they have, such as, it's not safe here, or it's not safe to show myself. And then that activation will take you into a physiological memory imprint of fear in your body, and perhaps into a fight-flight state. And it will make you feel the way that you felt back then when the original trauma occurred.
And this all happens so quickly, nobody realizes it many times.
Most people don't realize that's what's happening to them because they just feel, because it's so, it feels normal to them because this is something that they've been feeling all their life.
Right.
And, you know, so, and it comes on both an emotional and a physiological level, and it does feel like it's happening now when these activations happen there is no, unless we make a point of tracking ourselves and being able to differentiate the past from the present, it's just going to feel like it's happening right now. So if you feel like, you might feel like you're really in danger and like somebody is actually going to kill you or do something really bad to you, and there's absolutely nothing happening in the room.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're completely safe, but physiologically your whole body is ready to fight or flight.
Mm.
Yeah. So it has a felt sense of a present time situation while it's actually about something from the past.
Yes.
And so many of us are activated in various ways every day and we don't realize that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So part of my work is to help people identify their triggers and their activations and help them to track. Tracking is really great because you can start to see where these things are happening, and then I help people to build new resources, and then they can actually get in charge of what's going on. So one of the things that people often ask me is, how can I know if I'm activated into an early memory?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give some just some signs here of how you might be able to know that you're actually activated into something. If you're having feelings about something that seem overblown, for example, or just perhaps inappropriate or really strong for the situation, you may actually be activated. For example, if a situation is, say it's stimulating at about a 1 out of 10, and you're reacting to it as if it's an 8 out of 10, you could well be activated into an old memory.
Okay.
Other signs of activation are skin coloration changes, red, white, and yellow, blink rate going up, your nervous system starting to rev or close down, sweating, losing contact with your normal resources. By that I mean, for example, if you were in a situation that was abusive to you, a situation, say, which you might normally leave and advocate for yourself, sometimes when you're activated, you can't advocate very well for yourself in the way that you might normally.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're in an activation and you don't have contact with your normal resources. So your normal adult resources, you may be able to say, hey, I'm out of here, this stinks or something, you know.
But
when you're activated into, say, a prenatal memory and you're in that place in an activation, you may not have that resource available to you. That makes sense?
Yes. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, you're bringing another aspect into this that I've never considered before, or that, you know, I think a lot of people haven't. And all of my life I've heard about activations from earlier childhood. But you are saying that we can be activated from prior to birth. And I think this is such a new thing for most people.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how much people would be amazed by how much their little ones from back then are involved in their daily life.
And when you speak of little one, you're meaning that little prenate that is still living within.
Yes, I am.
Yes
indeed.
Uh-huh.
I see that all the time in my practice.
Yes.
That's one of the things I'm working with a lot. So going on with the other signs of activation, if you suddenly find that you can't actually hear what's being said, you know, or your head feels fuzzy, that's a sign of some activation. And then just feeling, if you're feeling fear a lot or terror and or other feelings that are actually inappropriate to your situation, because there really isn't anything going on. There's nothing to be frightened of and certainly nothing to be terrified about, but that's how you feel. You are definitely in an activation. And then another way that these activations can come out is in the way that we sequence through things in our lives. Like, for example, the people who can never get something started or who can never finish something or who always get caught in the middle. They're really good at getting going, but they can't actually follow it through in the middle part. And those are all signs of some kind of activation happening where there's been a sequencing trauma in the early life.
Okay, when you talk about a sequencing tool or trauma, did you say?
A sequencing trauma.
Trauma, okay.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of that, or would you rather?
Yeah,
I can
do that really easily. For one of the things I seem to work with quite a lot is cesarean section trauma. And if you think about birth, Ray gave me this five-stage exercise, which is a really great exercise to do, where he looks at birth in five stages. So we look at the beginning, the pre-event, the beginning of the event, the middle of the event, the end of the event, and the post-event. So that's five stages. And if you look at birth, you could look at birth as having those five stages, and we'll just use it on birth for now because that's nice and simple. And if you look at a cesarean birth, what happens often in a, let's say, an emergency cesarean, because they're different. An emergency cesarean, there's usually the baby usually starts the birth as normal because the baby is the one that initiates the contractions and everything. The baby gets the sense of initiating the birth. They get a chance to go through some labor, so they go through the beginning. They might get through to the middle part in the sequence of the birth, but then suddenly somebody comes along and pulls them out.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So that part of the sequence, they have an interruption, a major, major interruption.
Yes.
Okay.
And
so they don't get to finish that sequence in their body, and everybody really needs to finish that sequence, and everybody needs to have a felt sense of being able to go all the way through and finish. Because if they don't get to get that imprint in their body, then they can't actually do that in their life.
Yes.
And so that's why you get people that are getting stuck in different places in the sequence. Some people, like a cesarean, for example, apart from having transitional trauma quite a lot in their daily life, finding it difficult to transition from one thing to another, which is not surprising, there'll also be certain places in the sequence where they can get very activated and find it very difficult because they don't have that. They have the traumatic imprint and they don't have that sequence in their body that they need to be able to have that felt sense of being able to start something and follow it through all the way through to completion and then finish.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It just makes perfect sense.
So when cesarean kids come here, they really have to do the birth, you know, the experience having like a normal birth sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Often they want to do that over and over again, coming out the normal way. Because they need to get that imprint in their body so that they can finish. And they also need to process the trauma of what happened.
Yes. And you said before, that last week in part one, that many times children, when they come to do work with you, they will go right in. They will get
the
toys and just show you all about what is going on with them.
They do. Oh, they do. They really do. Yeah, they really just
amazing.
Go right to it if they know somebody's listening. They just tell you. It's really wonderful.
Oh, so beautiful.
So that
really
sequencing
is.
Issues, and that's just a very brief sense of what that can be, but that's a pretty
big
subject just on its own, obviously.
Yeah.
And not being able to sequence through things very easily. Another sign of activation is dissociation.
Dissociation, did you say?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes people leave just as a way of managing something really overwhelming, and it's really hard to come back in.
And how's that related?
Well, if you if you think about what's happening when you're in the womb, you're actually growing your body, and you're beginning the process right from conception. You're beginning the process of embodiment, of becoming a spirit coming into a body.
Sure.
And, you know, the thing about embodiment is it's a long process.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen quickly, and for some people it never happens at all, really, depending on the environment that they come into and how conducive it is to being present and embodied. So if you come into a toxic womb and it's very a threatening place, and you're not wanted, or, you know, there's just not a lot of really good stuff happening, then you don't have a lot of incentive to really be present. And if you can't really come into your body unless you feel safe and unless you are, there's an absence of too much trauma or...
Sure.
Yeah. So dissociation is really just about being out of it, isn't it?
Of course, not wanting to be where they are.
Yeah. And it's a survival skill, really.
Yes.
It often has its roots in a very early survival skill where something happened or the environment was very toxic and that person had to survive by leaving.
And then they
carry on doing it and they don't even realize that that's what they're doing or why they're doing it because it just feels
right.
so familiar.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. You know.
And you're saying that so much of this goes back to, can go back to the prenatal experience.
Oh, yeah, most of it. Most, of it. Most of it. Even if there's been later things, you know, later layers that have been added on or other traumas and difficulties, I think there's always a prenatal layer in most of the things that are going on with people.
Yes.
And
yes.
some people, it's a lot stronger than others because they've had very... very big and traumatic experiences back then, you know.
Certainly. I heard, I think I'd shared in the first part of the program that, you know, I heard about, 7 years ago, that the way you live your life is the way you were birthed.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not understand that, but I just had a bell of truth to me, a ring of truth. So, I'm so glad that the universe put me in touch with you. I want to let our listeners know that this is the Voice of Change, and we have Karen Melton with us right now. She is a prenatal and perinatal therapist, and she works with the prevention and healing of prenatal, birth, and bonding trauma with babies, adults, kids, and parents.
Mm.
And her website is healyourearlyimprints.com.
Yeah.
That's healyourearlyimprints.com. And your phone number, Karen?
It is 707-829-1764.
Excellent. You know, I know you work in Northern California, but I just, you know, with doing these radio programs, I think we're going to have people interested in this work from around the country. Is there any way that you can work with anyone over the telephone or teleclasses? You can.
Yes, I do work on the telephone. I can
wonderful.
I can do quite a lot on the telephone.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I think this is just such a wonderful opportunity for people to really get in touch with, if they are having, you know, challenges in their life in some area, what might be going on.
Well, if somebody calls me and I feel I can't really do anything with them on the phone, I'll certainly help them to try and find somebody nearer to them or
figure
something out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
wonderful.
Please call me if you're needing some, you know, I'm happy to talk to people.
Wonderful.
And shall I just finish off this signs of activation here? And
yes, please do.
On to the next one. It's amazing how much time it's taking.
Yeah, well, you know what? You know, I think this is so important, though, because these are the things that people can relate to. So, you know, if we have to do a part three someday, we can do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we
have the time.
Yeah, and we are trying to cram a huge subject into a very short time.
Yes.
So. We're just touching into these things right now.
Sure.
Another sign is unexplainable physical sensations.
Mm.
Because, of course, with these memories living in the body, they do tend to have an effect on us physically in various ways. Panic attacks is another sign of activation. Anxiety, unexplainable anxiety, numbness, and hypervigilance. That's a very common one. And then just, you know, generally inappropriate emotional responses to situations. I think I mentioned that one earlier. That's about it for now.
Amazing how many different ways our experience, earlier an experience, can affect one. So perhaps we're ready to go on. How does preparation before conception affect birthing outcomes?
Yeah, that's a good question. Preparation before conception does affect birthing outcomes positively, I think. And because in the preparation, well, it depends what you do in the preparation, but what I think is important to do in the preparation is to look at a number of things. One of them I think we talked about in part one, which was how you yourself came in. So how did you come into life? And what happened to you in the womb? What kind of experience did you have? And what was your birth like? That's really important to look at in terms of birthing outcomes, because the kind of the way that you came in will affect the way that you bring in your little one, your child. So that's really important. And another level of that to really look at is to really take a look at ancestral imprints. And those are the ones that have been carried down through generations that can actually be powerful in these situations that, like birthing. Mm-hmm. They're present in the reproductive practices and experiences and birthing experiences of the women in that line.
Certainly.
So it's really important to take a look at what are the ancestral imprints around birthing and being pregnant. What is that story there? And see if there's anything there that's been going on that you actually do not wish to continue with.
Yes.
Because you can actually decide. You can actually look at it and say, you know what? I don't want to do that.
Yes.
I don't want to carry that on down another generation.
Right.
So what am I going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really important layer in it too.
Mm.
And then another is really just how open you are or how tightly pulled in you are in your body and your emotions. And if you feel that you're kind of a tightly wound person or you don't find it very easy to open, how did you get that way? You know, what's going on there? It's a very important question to answer for yourself before you get anywhere near birthing, because it can make it very difficult for you to open up to birth if your natural way of being in yourself is to be pulled in or contracted. And if somebody is pulled in or contracted generally in their energy or their way of being in the world, there's usually a really good reason for that. And it's actually a survival stance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty primal survival response to contract. You know,
sure.
To protect oneself. It's that really primitive level of making ourselves smaller.
Yes.
You know, and
so
to really look at those things about what happens to you when you imagine opening up to let this child come through you. What comes up for you?
Mm-hmm.
What's there for you when you when you visit that place in yourself? Go and explore that before you get there, because you can plan to have the most wonderful birth, maybe a home water birth with a wonderful midwife and a doula and everything else. But if you can't open up, it doesn't matter that you've got a nice tub of water there and a wonderful midwife.
Yes.
You know, because
yes.
there might be something that you needed to be aware of to allow that letting go to happen.
Yes.
I actually think it's really important to explore that before you get to the situation.
Oh, Karen, as you speak about this, I mean, this could be a master's course, because there are so many different levels of understanding and so pertinent to one's life, one's birth, one's children.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, so beautiful. Yes. Opening up certainly would be something to explore.
Yeah. Of course, another thing, I mean, I'll go on with these and then we'll talk a little bit about this from the baby's point of view. If there's been any trauma in your womb or reproductive area, that needs to be explored.
Mm-hmm.
And I include in that abortions, prior lost children, and such like, you know, miscarriages, stillbirth, whatever. Any trauma in that area. And, of course, that includes sexual abuse. Which I'm not going to go into a lot, but sexual abuse does come up during birthing, usually for women, not surprisingly.
Oh, yeah,
and it can really interfere with the birthing experience. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that you know, if you've been sexually abused, you have to get that all sorted out before you give birth.
Yes.
But I am saying that if you know you've been sexually abused, it would be a really good idea to get some help, get enough help to feel some resources around that, and to get familiar enough with how the sexual abuse is imprinted in your body, because sexual abuse is another example of body imprinting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a body imprint a lot often with sexual abuse. and the activations are physiological, and the memories are usually body memories.
Mm-hmm.
And you
mm-hmm.
don't really want to have a big activation coming up around your sexual abuse when you're trying to give birth.
Of course not.
But this does happen for a lot of women, and it really does stop them from opening up to let their baby out. So there can be some, you know, I did some work with a woman who had actually remembered some sexual abuse during her pregnancy. She started having really, really terrible nightmares and dark dreams, and we looked at what was going on. I did a session with her, and she remembered, not long before she was about to give birth, this experience of sexual abuse. And I just really held it in the, what do we need to know about this experience that's going to help you have a really good birth?
Yes.
Place. And she, I just did some really simple empowerment with her, some very physical body empowerment, had her pushing me away and things like that. And it was hard. I'm not saying it wasn't hard for her that came up right then. Of course it would be for anybody. But the fact is, she got some empowerment before she went into the birth.
Yeah.
And I knew that if that came up for her during her birthing, she would know what it was.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
She would have that feeling, and she would know, oh, that's that feeling of that. And she wouldn't be in the dark about it.
Oh, yes, it's beautiful.
She'd have a way of holding herself in it. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's just a little bit about that. The other thing that really affects birthing outcomes, of course, is we've all been in a womb, and what happens to us when we're in the womb and our experience of being in a womb, excuse me, our experience of being in the womb affects our perception of our birth. So I'm talking about this now from the inside, from the baby's point of view.
Okay.
So we need to know that you know, birth isn't just something that's happening in isolation to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Birth is affected by how we've come in at conception. It's affected by our parents' relationship with each other. It's affected by our womb environment. It's affected by any of the things that have happened to us while we were in the womb. Especially difficult things can make it difficult for us to come to our birth. And I know you've had an experience of that yourself, Sharon.
Yes, exactly.
Which you mentioned in the last show.
Sure. Do you want me to just share that briefly?
You don't have to,
right,
if you want to, yeah.
Well, I had the experience several years ago that I did not want to be born because there was a great deal of smoke in the house. And I just sensed that actually in the womb, and so basically, you know, did not want to be born, go into that, and yet at the same time when contractions came, there was a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
So, yes, definitely.
So you get a double bind happening when that happens.
Right, exactly.
Right, because
exactly.
You've got that strong feeling of wanting to not come into a toxic place, but you have to come into it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it kind of
lays
down.
And so many times my life was, you know, either one or the other. There was choices.
Yeah.
And had to really look at that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember myself when I was coming in that I felt very ambivalent about it too, and that was because my mother didn't want me.
That would be so hard.
And I remember when I was getting born that I just wanted it. My strongest feeling was I just wanted to get out of there as fast as I could and get away from her.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and of course I couldn't get away from her because she was my mother, and there's another double bind. You know.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's hard.
Just so much,
that,
yes.
That's right. And then think of, for example, you know, someone who knows that they're going to be adopted when they get born. You know, why is that baby going to want to come out?
Right.
You know, there's so many things that go on in the womb that affect the way that we feel about being born and affect our perception of being born. So,
You know, I had the most beautiful story yesterday, and I'll just share it briefly here. This was a lady telling me a story that she knew of someone many years ago that, I mean, this is literally probably 70 years ago, this lady was pregnant, and she just wanted her child to be a musician, and she talked to her. This is 75 years ago, Karen. She talked to her and said, you know, Mama just loves you so much, and I want you to love music and to be a musician. And so she's kind of programming her there. Anyway, she ended up being a classical musician, and she loved music. And I'm just going, oh, my goodness, you know, we just need to realize how potent our thoughts are toward our children, toward our unborn children.
Wow. I wonder what she wanted to be.
And so it's a fine line, isn't it? It's a fine line between sending love to our infant, to our unborn prenate, and allowing them to be who they are.
Yes.
And not programming, you know?
Indeed. I mean, it's well known from studies that prenates do actually love listening to music in the womb, and they particularly like Baroque classical music. And I remember Dr. William Emerson once telling us a story about his son Jamie when he was in the womb. They used to have time with him, just special time with him, where they'd just be with him, and they would always play this tape that had whales in the background, you know, actual whales making the sound, beautiful sounds that whales make. And he said that one time after Jamie was born, and he was in the kitchen, Jamie was in his little thing that he was in, and he was only a couple of months old, I think, he said, and he said suddenly he heard this sound from across the kitchen. It sounded like a whale, and he said he couldn't understand where it was coming from, and eventually he realized that it was Jamie, and that this was his way of telling him that he needed some attention.
Oh, my.
You know, because he's kind of got trained in the womb. He's like, this is the time, I need my time with you, you know. And it included whales, which is a sweet story.
And who was that person that told you that?
Oh, William Emerson.
Okay. Emerson. Oh, your teacher. Okay. Okay. Emerson.
I mean, one of the things
amazing.
One of the things I'd like to say, just as we're talking about all these activations and imprints and things, is that you can actually change them. That's the good news.
Yes.
The good news is you don't actually have to live with all of these things, and you can actually change them. So I just really want to say that at this point, because it can all sound a little bit overwhelming, and this is the work that I do, and there are others of us doing it. So please don't feel, you know, that you're stuck with these things, because you're not.
Yes, and the other thing, too, I know you don't have to get all the answers for things to shift in your life, too. You know,
no, you don't. I mean, that's true, too. I'm not suggesting that anybody needs to get everything sorted out before they get pregnant. That's just really not realistic.
Exactly, you've mentioned that, right.
It's really just about having some tools and some resources that allow you to be more aware of yourself, to understand the way that you came in and some of the ways that you can get activated, and to have some skills that you can build on as a person in your daily life that you can use as a parent, really practical skills.
Yes, exactly.
You know, yeah.
Exactly.
It's not about, oh, I have to get everything sorted out before I can get pregnant. That's really not realistic.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I know, too, your expertise, you know, in talking with someone, you can just kind of feel them out and go right to the source of what they need to know. And it's just so beautiful the way you set the intentions, you know, when you work with someone. So, you know, I encourage people to contact you and just know that, you know, it's not a, you know, a 10-year process to really have wonderful answers. I know I've worked with you a few times, and it's just so beautiful the way that you work and the results from it. So,
thank you.
Oh, my pleasure to say that, because it's so very true.
Thank you, Sharon.
Yes. So anything else that you want to add about this particular section?
I don't think so.
Just so many reasons to understand and to prepare before conception. We have about 8 minutes. Maybe we can go on to one more here. If imprints are in the body, how can we change them so that we are not run by them anymore? For example, if I had a difficult birth, you know, coming myself, what would I need to know to ensure that this does not repeat when I give birth? You've kind of spoken about this a little bit, but perhaps you can do
Just to say something about that is that because these imprints are body imprints, they need to be worked with in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that I look at. Somebody else might not agree with that, but that's the way I see them. I think that they really, it's much easier to repattern them when you, well, I don't see how you can do it without working with the body. You really have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what I do with them is that when I work with someone, I usually will help them to go just enough into that imprint to see what it is and to get the information they need in there and to get the felt sense of it. And at the same time as they're doing that, I'm helping them to build new resources in that place. And as we do that, they get a chance to integrate something that happened that they never got a chance to integrate. And they also have a chance to have some new resources built around it, so that when they touch into that place again, they'll find those new resources there, and not just the old ones. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have a little more choice built into that space about what they can actually do when they feel it again.
Okay, well, when you talk about resourcing, and I see that in your class series you state that people will build more internal resources. What do you actually mean by that? What are resources?
Well, yeah, good question. What I really mean by that is that they're a sense of internal abilities and skills and self-awareness that support you to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of a being aware of your needs and activations and having the ability to soothe yourself in those places.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That is so powerful, isn't it? What can you do yourself to really take care of yourself in a moment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is true, because if you think about when you're a prenate or just a newborn, the resources that you have available at that age to deal with stressful or traumatic experiences or environments are very different from the resources that you would have as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are surprised as adults to discover that they're actually still using their prenatally learned resourcing methods.
Mm. That's so amazing.
Yeah, and so and that's really usually not working very well for people,
mm-hmm.
you know, not surprisingly.
Right.
So responses that they're having, defenses that they have, or deep beliefs that they have that have all been imprinted from a prenatal time, and maybe from early trauma and shock, are very unlikely to be serving you in a healthy way as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so your resources back then were limited to that stage of development, and then as an adult you have a much wider range of resources and options available. So in a way it's about what do we need to build inside of you to give you those adult resources now and help you to what's the way I want to put this, to have your adult be more in charge in a way.
Yes.
In those places that were previously being run by your prenate on prenatal resources and beliefs.
Yes. Oh.
And that's a whole process that I take people through.
Uh-huh.
And then you have a lot more choice about how you want to respond to things when you have more resources.
Yes.
So, for example, if you learned in the womb that to stay alive you had to take care of your mother, that's a fairly common one. In your post-birth life, that may actually translate into you being a compulsive caretaker.
Ah.
And so that impulse to take care of others, which is really a survival response, is driven by an underlying fear that you won't survive if you don't stop taking care of everyone.
Oh, isn't that amazing? How can a prenate take care of the mother in the womb?
Well, really, a prenate can't take care of a mother in a womb.
No, but how
a prenate can decide that that's their job to take care of a mother.
Okay, sure, decide.
Okay.
Uh-huh, sure.
Because and they can feel that on a survival level, if they don't take care of this mother who's not taking care of herself,
yes,
that they won't survive, because of course they won't.
Yes, right.
So it gets imprinted in that way. Mm. It's not cognitive. It doesn't make cognitive sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it really
mm-hmm.
makes deep body sense.
Yes.
Yeah. So at some level, they'll feel like they're really going to die if they stop doing this, because
yeah.
it was so necessary for them to do that in the womb. And back mm. then, that was actually a very smart thing to do, probably.
Of
that
course.
Little one actually made a pretty smart decision. They made some kind of survival
yeah.
decision. And the truth is, it actually got them here, and it got them through.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's no longer serving them. To be
exactly.
compulsively taking care of other people because you think you'll die if you stop doing it is not serving you.
Of course. Of course.
So the integrated and updated and healthier version of this would be taking care of people because you're consciously choosing to do so and not because you're driven by a prenatal survival response.
Mm-hmm. And just becoming aware of that is part of
that's,
it, right?
That's right. And the other healthy part of that is that in that healthy version of this, you'd actually also be able to let other people take care of you
mm-hmm.
and be able to take good care of yourself too. Because
yeah.
often people that are compulsive caretakers are terrible at taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm, because they put all their time and energy into doing someone, helping someone else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So that's just one example of that. Do you have another time for another one, or do we
sure.
need to
sure.
another example?
Mm-hmm.
Is that if say you were unwanted as a baby, and many of us start out that way, so you may perceive yourself in relationships and in the world generally as not wanted, even when you are wanted, and this is because you're living from an old implicit memory, and your prenate is still running the show from that mistaken belief. So this can be very isolating, and it can separate you from new resources that you might build, both inside and outside yourself. And with some healing and some new resources, your prenate and her trauma, if integrated, would no longer be running your life, and then a new set of skills can be learned in relating to people and in holding that place in yourself, that wounded place in yourself that feels, I am not wanted.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So that there are many beliefs that arise out of early development, like I have to do it all alone, or
mm-hmm.
you will abandon me, or life is a struggle, or I'm not wanted. There are many of them. And
yeah.
these imprints are really powerful, and they actually can be running your life. So new resources are an important part of changing and healing these tender places.
Of course.
And new resources can include being able to understand and have some coherence about your story, being able to settle your own nervous system, being able to track yourself as a part of self-care, being able to make choices and decisions from your adult self and to know when you're not,
mm-hmm.
being able to ground in your body and be more present, being able to know when you're activated into an early memory and have the choice about whether you want to stay in it or come out of it. These are all resources that can be built.
Yes.
Knowing
yes.
what you want and being able to follow through and get your needs met.
And
being
I know
able
you
to,
mentioned... I'll go right ahead.
Being able to make conscious choices.
Yeah.
And having outer resources as well, such as good support networks and close supportive friends.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that, you know, because these memories were actually activated in a relationship with another, that's why
yeah.
it's so important to heal them with another. And
yeah.
that's where you come in so beautiful. Well, Karen, yeah. let's give your information one more time.
Okay.
It's healyourearlyimprints.com.
Yeah.
That's Karen Melton. And the phone number is
707. 829-1764.
Yes.
And if people like my website is a really great resource website, and
yes.
I have a really fun article blog there now as well, with just a number of short articles on there if people want to get more information and read a little bit more. That's really a fun thing to do.
Excellent. Thank you, Karen, so much. This has just been a delightful hour, and I encourage anyone who is listening to the both parts of the program, part one and part two. Thank you again.
Thank you, Sharon.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
I want to let everyone know that Friday night I have another program at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and Rebecca Valentine is going to be with me for that hour. She is a sustainability visionary, possessing a wry sense of humor and a geeky enthusiasm for eco-living. She has an extensive background in green building professionally and a sustainability consultant. She worked in solar energy sales and marketing. She's also been a consultant for the documentary Your Solar Home. So that is Friday night on The Voice of Change here at Blog Talk Radio, 6 to 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Voice of Change.